If you're trying to figure out how to navigate the tricky tightrope of parenting while you have questions, doubts, and wonderings about your spiritual journey, our podcast is for you.
It doesn't matter if your kids are smalls, middles, or bigs. We'll explore what and how we're deconstructing from churchianity, harmful belief systems, and diving deep into the ways we can work this out in parenthood.
We're also going to work through ideas for reconstructing a space for our families to thrive under new systems of love and freedom.
We can't wait to bring you some hope that you're not alone and that it's really okay, even good, to explore all the possibilities that may have felt closed off in the past.
Our podcast is going to offer you grace and space to be exactly where you are and who you are.
We're really glad you're here, and we're excited for today's episode. Listen in.
The church needs to be called out and take responsibility for the damage it has done to people. The survivors should be heard. So no, I don't always talk about the good, because until the darkness is exposed and more people are removed from power that absolutely should not be in it, I will not be quiet. Amber Schultz.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Deconstructing Mamas podcast. We're talking with Amber Schultz today. She's the host of the YouTube channel Fundy Freed. She grew up in an IFB sect and is just really excited to talk with us about her journey. And we're excited to talk with her. So thanks so much, Amber, for being on.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on here today.
Yeah, this is going to be a good conversation. We already know it.
Yes.
Before we dive into some of the deeper stuff, can you tell us a little bit about what your day looks like, what your family looks like, and then what makes your heart come alive outside of some of those more obvious things about you, like maybe a little thing that you like to do at the end of the day or like just like a fun little fact?
Okay, so I am a music teacher. So I teach piano and guitar and vocals. So that's kind of like my daytime job. And I get my kids to school. I am actually currently in school for naturopathic medicine. I also am the head blog editor for the Vashti Initiative. And they help people coming from very high controlled religious environments. And I have a lot of good resources. And then, you know, I get my kids from school. I teach some music. And then I started again the next day. So we start all over again. And of course, I do my content stuff for Fundy Free too, sprinkled in there. One of my biggest passions is I actually am part of a production team and we make movies. And our movies are based on local lore here in East Tennessee. And so we have three movies out and they're streaming. I'm really proud of the whole project. So that's one of those things that makes me like really excited.
Are the movies about something in particular?
So the first movie is about the legend of Spearfinger, and she's a Cherokee legend. And then the second movie is actually about religious trauma and how we can't judge who gets to heaven, and it's based around Y2K and what really would have happened if Jesus came back. And like, there's like some horror bits thrown in there. It's like a whole thing. So yeah, so each one has a very specific underlying theme. And the third movie is about what happens to children who are abused and they grow up and they become like, you never know why a child becomes like a sociopath or whatever as an adult, like, but it kind of like shows light on childhood trauma. So
wow,
you've got a lot going on.
Well, and how old are your kids?
My oldest is almost 13 and my middle is almost 11 and my baby is 9.
Well, Liz said in her announcement about you that you were part of the IFB.
Yes.
Sect or
yes,
of Christianity or denomination. So could you describe in one word or one phrase, maybe your faith background related to the IFB?
I would say extreme cognitive dissonance.
Oh, Can you tell us more about that?
Mm-hmm. So the belief that we were so much on the side of the right, but really at the same time, we were so detrimental and hateful towards so many people. The biggest piece of cognitive dissonance I found in the IFB world I grew up in was whenever it came to loving other people. Because we're taught, you know, that we're supposed to love our neighbors, we love ourselves. We're supposed to do all these good things. And in our minds, as the IFB Christian, we're doing that by doing hellfire and brimstone preaching. We're doing that by street preaching. We're doing that by all of these outreach ministries. But really, we are doing more harm than good because we're really hateful. Like, the IFB tends to be very racist, very bigoted, very homophobic. And I really think that's steeped in the fact that we are taught that we ourselves are unlovable. We're horrible creatures. We don't deserve anything. And because we have such hateful relationships with ourselves as individuals, we can't actually properly love our neighbors as we love ourselves. And so that is where I think the core of the disconnect is. A lot of Christianity is that we are told to love everyone, but we can't even love what it should start with, who is ourselves.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
I mean, that's basic Christianity, right? Like, love your neighbor as yourself. And yet we literally don't do it.
Yeah.
It kind of blows my mind.
Are you saying, Liz, that we don't love ourselves?
Right. There's no focus on love of self. There's focus on love of others. There's focus on love of God. But there's no focus on love of self.
Because it's considered very selfish.
Right.
It's considered vain. It's considered prideful. It's considered all these things. Even in the acronyms we're taught in Sunday school, like JOY, or whenever you pray, it's supposed to be like Jesus first, others second, yourself last.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're ingrained in this. A lot of times our hatred towards other people comes from what we hate about ourselves. We project. So we see these behaviors in other people and we automatically hate them because we don't accept it in ourselves. So sorry, I didn't mean to get like super philosophical there, but that's just kind of where I see it.
I was even thinking there, like, we can't really love our neighbor. And we're only going to love our neighbor the way we love ourselves.
Yes.
We only have the capacity to give away what we actually have. If I have $20, I can give you $10. But if I don't have $20, I am not giving you $10.
Right.
And so that's where I wonder if Jesus was so smart to say, love your neighbor as yourself, because he's getting to the point of, you got to love yourself or you're not going to have any love for your neighbor. In fact, you're going to treat your neighbor the same way as you treat yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder often if the hate that seems to come out of people's hearts is really hatred toward themselves, which is just, I feel so sad about it.
Yes.
It's just sad.
It is because it's so much deeper than I don't like the fact that so-and-so didn't take their trash to the end of the road. Like, we actually have like a very deep-seated loathing for ourselves. Like, we have to police our very thoughts. We can't feel sadness. We can't feel depression. We can't feel all of these things. So why would we then be understanding to the people around us who are struggling with that? Because we can't even have that same love for ourselves.
Right.
I also just think about like burnout in the church too, right? Like, you're just constantly serving other people,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's like even beyond like just, you know, the kind of person that you are towards other people, right? Like, some people, it's like they seem so loving and they seem all these things, right? But they're burnt out on the other end,
mm-hmm.
which isn't helpful either.
No. Well, it's because it's a required ministry. You know, we're supposed to do these things. So it becomes performative. And if you're performing all the time and your heart is not in it, then you're going to get burnt out very quickly. And it's almost like there's that expectation to serve versus people doing it because they want to.
Hmm.
Like, I have to do this to appear holy. I have to do this to get to heaven, depending on which path of salvation you believe in. So it becomes less about people and relationships and more about the status quo.
Yeah. So Amber, what prompted your faith deconstruction?
I had always had doubts in the back of my mind, even from a young age, about what I'd been taught, especially growing up in a very abusive household and everything. But the catalyst for me was whenever my husband had just gotten back from Afghanistan. He had been deployed for a year. We were very, very young. We were stationed in Germany, very isolated. Our nearest King James only Bible church was 2 hours away because we couldn't go to any other church near us because it was ungodly. And so we were very isolated. And my husband came back and he had severe, severe PTSD and like mental health issues from his time in Afghanistan. And we were told, you just need to pray more. You need to, you know, get him into church. You need to do this, do that, you know, spiritual wise. And I found him after a suicide attempt. And I had to make the decision I was like 23 years old. And I had to make the decision to admit him to a psychiatric facility. Because I could not help him. Leadership could not help him because he needed, you know, psychiatric help.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so against everything we'd grown up with because we were taught mental health is a sin. Mental health issues is like, it's nothing like what it really is. And so I struggled so much with sending him because like his family even blamed me for his suicide attempt. His family blamed me for having to send him to a psychiatric ward because I was not Christian enough to pray these things away. So that was like the catalyst going, oh my God, something is terribly wrong here. Because if this is what he needs. And God, in his grand wisdom, created these humans who have the ability to help people in this situation. Why can't we use them? Why is it a sin to go to them? If I can go to the doctor because my arm is broken, why can't he go to the doctor because his brain is broken? Mm-hmm. But that was like the moment that just shifted. And it was, whenever he got back from the psych ward, I chose then to go into therapy for the first time myself. Terrified, absolutely terrified. I thought they were going to try to suck all my religion out of me. They were going to try to take my soul. There's all the things that you think going into a humanistic therapy session. And I found that it was the most open and the most accepting place I could have gone to be able to work through what I was dealing with. That was the turning point, was getting mental health help for my husband and then for myself. And that was the massive catalyst of the start of my deconstruction.
Wow, that is really powerful. Liz and I talk a lot here on the podcast with people about mental health and how important that is for all of us. And we're always trying to journey toward healing. And you said something about even your abuse as a child. Was your abuse as a child related, do you think, to the high control religion at all?
I think it facilitated it versus causing it. My dad was, or is, he's still alive. I just don't have any contact with him. He is a clinical narcissist. And I know the term gets thrown around a lot nowadays, but he's actually a legitimate clinical narcissist. Like, he could be diagnosed, but he thrived in the environment where he could control people because it was easy for him to move up in the ranks. He's very charismatic. He knows the Bible from cover to cover. He has so many scriptures memorized, it's ridiculous. And he just was able to move up the ranks and stay in control. And so the abuse was facilitated by the high control environment because I had it at home and also in the church. So the two places that were supposed to be the safest space for me were actually the most detrimental.
I mean, this is true for me, and I'm wondering if this was true for you in this journey that you went on with yourself and your husband. Like, when someone says to you, actually, like, this is a chemical issue with your brain, it's sort of a game changer when you've been told your entire life that,
yes,
right, this is like demon possession or evilness, or you haven't done enough. Mm-hmm. When someone says, no, literally, if I showed you a picture of your brain, like, this is what it would look like. And
yes,
that can be like a major shift when we're trying to figure out, or not even figure out, when we're trying to move towards this like new way of thinking about mental health.
Yes.
Is like the actual scientific facts of why we feel this way, right?
And one of my favorite books that I've ever read is called The Body Keeps Score, and how trauma affects the body.
Oh yeah.
Because I have a lot of like chronic health issues. For like 2 years, I had chronic shingles where I was getting shingles like every 6 weeks. It was insane. At the time, there was a lot of trauma that had kind of like come out that I had forgotten about. And like my body was just processing it all out. Hmm. And that's the thing, is if you change the language around it to, this is your fault, you're the one that's making these choices, you're not spiritual enough to wait. It's not your fault. Really, you just need a little bit of extra medicine, like the diabetic over here needs insulin to kind of help balance out those brain waves a little bit. Or, you know, yeah, you have chronic pain, but here's why. You're not crazy. Your body's processing out this trauma. To me, having those labels makes me feel less crazy, I guess, for the lack of the better term. That's how how I used to talk to myself.
Yeah,
I told myself I was crazy all the time. And really, the labels helped me almost organize them into like little files. I'm like, okay, I have complex PTSD. This is what behaviors exhibit from this.
Yes.
I have this dissociative disorder. These are the behaviors that exhibit from this. I'm really not crazy. I'm just processing all these things that are out of my control. And now there's medicine that can help me. There's therapy that can help me.
Yeah.
Make it much easier to work through the process.
Mm-hmm. When we went to couples therapy, I had gone to individual for a long time, but when we went to couples therapy, the cute little therapist, who I absolutely love, used to always get out his brain. He had like a physical little brain with all the parts, and he would just hold it up to us and be like, well, here's the part of the brain that this is doing, and here's the part of the brain that's happening when you're, you know, accusing your husband of X, and here's what's going on because you feel very defensive. And he sucked all of the shame out of the room.
Yes.
And the most beautiful thing that happened in our relationship, my husband's and my relationship in that time, was when the shame is sucked out, then the blame goes away.
Yes.
And when I would see my husband react defensively, or more likely me reacting defensively, we'd be like, oh, your brain is on fire, you know? And it just sucked all that shame and blame. And it was so beautiful. And we had so much more healing just because there was like a little image of a brain, and he just explained it in physical terms.
Yes.
Instead of spiritualizing it, gaslighting us, you know, making us feel crazy, which I felt forever and ever and ever. It's like, oh, this is actually mm-hmm. a normal bodily response to harm.
Yes. Yes.
It's yes. like, oh, your body's actually doing what it's supposed to do to protect you.
Right. Oh. It's amazing how it works.
Even though it doesn't always feel that way. Like, so it's like constantly reminding yourself, like, this is what your body had to do to survive. This is what your mind had to do to survive. Like,
yes,
it's a very tricky.
Which is protection in the ultimate sense. But man,
exactly. Yes.
Not in the immediate sense.
Exactly.
Protection as in like you're alive, but not protection as in like.
Right.
You're not safe. You're not any of these things. You're just like fight or flight. Or in my case, I fawn. Yeah. I get really, really small. I get really, 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 really quiet, and I shut myself down. And so for the last 3 years or so, I've been super intentional about working on emotional vulnerability. For me, I have found, even being so small, if I carry a journal or something with me, I can combat those thoughts a lot easier because I have a constant internal dialogue, which I find fascinating. Not everybody has that. I found that out recently too. I'm like, not everyone has an internal dialogue, but I do talk to myself.
Wait, what?
Yeah. There's some people who...
That is wild to me.
There's some people who don't actually have any visual pictures whenever they're imagining things.
Yes.
There's just nothing. And I'm like, everything is so visual.
So their brain just is.
It is.
Like, I don't understand. What?
My friend who is a therapist is that person. They don't have an internal dialogue. And he mm-hmm. said it is so helpful to him in therapy because he can really stay present. It's not that he the whole time is thinking about like what he's cooking for dinner, how this yes. is affecting him, why is his body, where I am a spiritual director. And the entire time I'm with a client now, all I'm doing is thinking, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have said that. Why did I talk? Am I making the person feel uncomfortable? I have the massive internal dialogue going on all the time.
Oh, I am.
And he's just free to be with the person. I'm a little jealous of that.
Yes. So my middle daughter, she's that way. And like, she loves to read, but the only thing that she likes to read are graphic novels because her brain doesn't picture the picture that she's reading them. So she has the pictures in front of her as she's reading through the book. I'm like, that just blows my mind.
I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated.
I totally rabbit trailed this. Sorry about that.
No, I love that. I mean, I'm very jealous of people that, I mean, my brain is always going. Cannot shut the damn thing off.
Yes.
It's wild.
So you shared earlier that you went to get professional help, right? Obviously.
Yes.
What were some of the toxic theologies in the middle of all of that you discovered? And as you describe them, lies you've been told. And what's been the hardest lie for you to unlearn?
Probably the hardest one for me to come to terms with was the fact that I have equal value to a man. Mm. Mm. Because I was grew up in a very, very subjugated world. And I'm not the only one. There's a lot of people who grew up the same way I did. But my dad was an extreme abuser at home. He's also my sexual abuser from the time I was like 4 until about 11 or 12. And being told from there, it's my fault if a man touches me. It's my fault that a man stumbles and does things to me. It's my fault if I'm not pure enough for whenever I get married. So this whole, from the time, my earliest memory, I was never good enough because of what my dad subjugated my body to. And so it was this constant belief that I had to overperform myself. I became a church pianist. I became Sunday school teachers. I did all these things, all the things right, because I was trying to make up for the fact I was not pure anymore. I was tainted. Mm. And coming to the realization that, one, it wasn't my fault. I was a victim. Two, purity culture is a horrendous teaching. I think abstinence is a good thing to teach, but purity culture in itself is very detrimental to boys and girls. And realizing that my value did not come from a body part. My value did not come from my performance of how well I did in church. how well I submitted to my husband, how well I've been over backwards to his family. None of that mattered. I already had value in myself. And I was important. I was worthy. I was loved. I was all of these things. And that's been like the root cause of all of my issues, is all of that conflicting information being fed into me from the time I was like a baby, basically. We were taught that women should not work outside the home, right? Like, we go from the headship of our father to the headship of our husband. We're barefoot and pregnant. We do all the things, right? Fast forward a good 10 years into this deconstruction process, right? I'm doing really good. I'm working outside the home. I'm making movies. I'm doing all these great things. I'm excited. I get sexually assaulted at my job during the day. And this was back in 2021. And the first 3 days, the only thing that would loop through my mind was, if you were at home where you were supposed to be, this would not have happened. And I'm like, why is that still in there? Yeah. I thought I'd gotten rid of that, but it was still there. And so it was like I had to work through the trauma of the sexual assault on top of the continuous reiterated trauma of, you're basically just a whore and a Jezebel because you're outside the home and you wear pants and you know, you're a mouthy broad. You talk too much. You have all these things going on. This is why this happened to you, because you were not doing what you're supposed to do.
Okay. I'm just like heartbroken listening to your story, but I also cannot even believe what is all hidden a lot of times.
Yeah.
That children are going through, you think like you're sexually abused by the person who's supposed to protect you in your young childhood. And then you get to puberty and all of a sudden all the teachings in the church is around purity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then also the teachings are around, it's your fault.
Yeah.
If a man looks at you and lusts after you. So here you are, a young person who is taking on the responsibility of their father's abuse because they're the female. Maybe you did something when you were little. And people wonder, it makes me go back to your quote, people wonder why we're kind of a little pissed off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. And I don't get pissed off on this podcast much, but those kind of things are true. They happen more than we realize, and they need to be brought into the light so that other people can see the damaging theologies.
Yes.
And why they're so toxic and harmful.
And how they stick, like you said, how they stick, like they, you had stick. Deconstructed, right? Like,
yes. This
was not that many years ago. And your being, your whole entire being still goes back to that place of believing that it's your fault, because like that was the foundation for everything that you were and that you believed. And so that's another thing that I think that people don't always understand, is that it's not like you just like deconstruct so you can wear like, you know, a thong or, you know, whatever, right? Like it's you deconstruct so that you can survive, like you deconstruct to save your own life. And then not only that, but you're doing it over and over and over again. Like, these things are coming up over and over and over again. It is a lifelong journey, and it is not the easy way out. It's absolutely not.
It is not. And that's the thing, is like, I almost chuckle a little bit at being called one of the great fallen away of like the last days, because, you know, that's what the church views people deconstructing as. We're the great falling away, right? At least in the churches that I left. But really, it's like, no, we're not falling away. We're reforming. This is like a reformation for us. This is us saying, no, Catholic Church, you cannot have the Bible only in Latin and tell us what to do. You know, like if we go back to like whenever Martin Luther nailed his thesis on the wall or on the door. But like, we're saying, no, we're done with the abuse. We're done with, you know, you telling us how God expects us to live whenever you're sitting here sweeping your own sins under the rug at the same time to save your face. The amount of men in leadership that I have been either groomed by or sexually assaulted by, or I've known actively doing it to other women, would astound you. Every single male leadership I've been under, except for one, and I've been in a lot of churches, have had some type of sexual deviant issue.
Well, if you give men, and it's the patriarchy, it's not individual men, right?
Right.
But if men are under a system where they're allowed to have all the power, or they're supposed to have all the power.
Yes.
It just makes sense to me that it will play out this way.
Yes.
It's not vilifying men as a gender or sex.
No.
I guess.
The system.
It's the system that, of course, if I was a person who was given all the power and I was unhealed or I was in a system, I have no idea how I would have used that power. And it's just, oh, it's just so upsetting and frustrating.
It is. And I get angry for the men too, because obviously I'm female. Females tend to have the worst end of the stick in this situation, but a lot of the men are victims too, because they're told from the very beginning, you are an animal. You can't control yourself. Mm-hmm. Just wait till you get married. You can do all the things you want to. They have this, it already pre-programmed in their mind to be these animals, to be these beasts, and that they have to somehow control these urges. And if they can't, it's not their fault.
Right.
You know, she should have dressed a little bit different. She shouldn't have shown her ankle. And so, and I can get on a soapbox with purity culture, because it's one of those things that makes me really angry. And then, like, having three daughters on top of that, I was like, there's no way in hell, excuse my French, that I am raising my three daughters in this type of environment at all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will not have my daughters thinking because they kissed a boy at 15, they're no longer pure for someone at 17, because I was told that once, because this guy wanted to court me, and because I had been kissed before, his mom said I was no longer pure and worthy of her son.
Wow.
I'm like, well, what would you think if you knew what my dad did to me? You know, that's the loser things that play in your mind. You know, it's like you get to a wedding night and you're not a virgin anymore because, you know, a piece of skin's missing, and it's like, what do you do with that?
Yeah,
that just plays with you.
I feel like I have shifted. I mean, purity culture is huge for me. I get very angry about purity culture. It was very harmful for me and many others that, you know, I know of.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I have shifted to this place where I have seen enough people get into relationships and marriages just to save their own purity that have ended horribly, or there's abuse that they're now going to be in their entire life because they don't believe in divorce, where I have said to my husband, like, I would rather my daughter as a teenager, like, know herself, have self-respect, be in a, like, loving, committed relationship and, like, make some of those choices, right, for herself from a place of understanding herself and some maturity. I mean, teenagers are teenagers, right? Than saving herself to marriage, having no idea who she is, no idea how to, like, love and respect herself or what she deserves in a partner,
mm-hmm.
and how to communicate that. Like, my perspectives, the things that are important to me have shifted. There's these things inside of us that are important as human beings that I'm learning at 33 that I'm like, if my kid knows that as a young person, like, I could care less. Right? If she is a virgin on the day that she gets married, right? And I mean, this isn't just for my daughter, but I think the emphasis is obviously on women, right? Especially when we come from high control religion.
Yeah. Right.
We'll get right back to today's podcast episode, but we wanted to give a shout out to a few of our Patreon supporters, Stevie Swift, Erica Garthwaite, and Claire Allison. Thank you so much for your support. For just $3 a month, you can be a part of our private Patreon group and help us keep the lights on at Deconstructing Mamas. And now, back to the episode.
We really appreciate you sharing all of the hard stuff that you've gone through. And I can't even almost believe that you've gotten to a place where, you know, you say you've learned to love yourself. And I know that was something you and I talked about on the YouTube episode I was involved in on Bundy Freed.
Yes.
And was there an aha moment for you at all in that process of learning to love yourself, or an aha moment, or what is one tool that you even say to yourself? Like, when you had that thing where you were sexually assaulted at work, were there tools that you had that you brought in that sort of fought that off?
So I'll answer it in twofold. Like, what the turning point for me, whenever I realized that I really needed to be the person that loved myself, was probably the end of 2020. So there had been some issues in my marriage. There had been some issues with my husband's family, because his family is still very much in a high controlled environment, and I'm very openly speaking against it. So it doesn't go over very well. And I hit a really low rock bottom. Like, his family had come out and they had told me called me all sorts of names. Like, I was a whore, a Jezebel, all these horrible things. My husband left for a little bit. Like, we had separated for a little while. He came back and was like, the only way we're going to get back together is if you do marriage counseling with a pastor, which was like this horrible thing for me because like I'm very traumatized by male authority in churches, but and I was in such a low spot. I felt like everything about myself was flayed open for everyone to see. And that was a huge thing for me because I was taught my whole life to keep the bad things hidden. Like what you see, I could be falling apart on the inside, but on the outside, you're just going to see a smile and a happy face. You're not going to know the turmoil behind the doors. And all the turmoil got exposed. And all that was left was me and a bunch of wreckage. And I was like, you know what? The only way I'm going to get through this is if I do this myself. Nobody else. I'm tired of being the subjugated woman. I'm tired of being my trauma. I'm tired of being all of these things. So at that point, I literally was like, I'm going to rebuild myself. And it was a very hard thing to do, to pick myself up and go, I don't like this quality. I'm not going to pick this back up. I want this quality instead. And so over time, I started picking up these pieces to start loving myself for who I am. Because I don't think I'm like all about a bag of potato chips, but I know that I have qualities that are good to contribute to society. And so whenever the assault happened, I'd been working on myself for probably about 8 months at that point. And what I did, instead of fawning and hiding, I pressed charges. I went to court. I got the guy charged. He got in trouble. I stood up for myself. I spoke up for myself. And while it, like to the outside world in my world, my circle, like it seemed so small, I'm going to get emotional. But I'd done something for myself I'd never done before. I told myself I was worthy enough to protect. And I was worthy enough to be loved. I was worthy enough to be stood up for. And if no one else was going to do it, I could do it myself. And that was like that big aha moment going, oh my God, I am worth this. I am worth pushing through this. And it was actually right. It was literally about 2 weeks after the trial date or the court date and everything was to finish is whenever I launched Fundy Freed. All of this was a stair step to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. And it got me to where I felt I was to the point that I had enough love for myself that I could start sharing that with other people for them to see that it is possible. That no matter how much you hate yourself at one point, you can get to the point where you accept yourself and love yourself for who you are. And you can see your good qualities. You can see what you can offer other people. And you can do that in a way that it's not, you know, bragging. I'm like, I'm this big, great person. No, this is a very humbling experience to start loving yourself because then you really start accepting all the things about yourself. So I got it. Really emotional.
No, that's really powerful.
Powerful.
We're just quiet because we don't want to just jump in and not hold space for a story like that. I think it is such a powerful thing. And I'm going to get emotional too. Your ability to say it stops right now and it stops here. And even if I do this one thing where I speak out for myself, it's going to tell a lot of people, including my kids.
Yeah.
This is not allowed to happen to you.
Yes.
You are to be valued. You are to be protected. And I'm a person too. I mean, the vulnerability that it lays out in front of the people you're trying to raise.
Yeah.
And the freedom that it lays out for your girls. I just think that's one of the most powerful stories.
Thank you so
that
much.
We've ever even had on the podcast. I'm like thinking like, yes, as soon as you said that, no one can see me, but yes. I like threw my fist in the air because I was like, I'm so glad.
Yeah.
That you did that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Wow. Well, we love your platform, Fundy Free. I love it. You share a lot of our stuff. Probably why we love it so much.
I love you guys so much though.
And obviously now you've told us a little bit of why you've created that space, but can you just dive into it a little bit more? We can go back to your quote, like you want things to be called out. Is it one more place that you're like reminding yourself to love yourself? I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
So starting in 2020, whenever I really made that shift for myself, I knew that I wanted to help other people because the hardest thing for me is dealing with things extremely alone.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I've done my whole life. I've shouldered the hard alone. And I know how hard and how lonely and how terrible that can be sometimes. And so it was starting in the beginning of 2021. I was like, I really want to do something, but we were still in a church. I had mentally checked out of the IFB for a really long time, but my husband was still very much in the faith. And, you know, it was a process to kind of get him to where he was ready to leave. But I knew I wanted to speak out, but I knew I couldn't speak out while I was still in the church, because the church that we were going to at the time was very racist. They had a picture of the first Grand Wizard of the KKK in the pastor's office. They preached flat earth.
Flat earth cracks me up. Sorry.
I know, right?
Yeah, it's wild.
It's so wild. And I was on staff at the church at the time. I was, total side note, my whole life, I'd wanted to be on paid staff at a church as a pianist. That was like the epitome goal for myself. I had achieved that at this point. I had achieved what my church dream goal was. And it's not what I wanted. I knew that's not what I wanted. But I had this desire to help people. And I couldn't figure out how to do it. I couldn't figure out. I would talk to people in here and there. I would like share some stuff on my own social media here and there. But it was not enough. It was around the time of like the sexual assault and all this stuff going on in that. I was like, why don't I work with someone that already has a platform? So I reached out to a couple of like influencers or advocates or whatever, and nothing really came to fruition. Then one day I was like, why don't I just start my own? And I'm like, oh, why don't I start my own? What do? I have no idea. I'm building from the ground up. I'm not very good at networking. And in my mind, I'm like, if I help one person, then that's worth it. Like, I don't really care about having like millions and millions of followers and being like this massive influencer. My goal is to help people not feel alone. So I had made a commitment to the church we were in to do the Christmas play. And I'm like, I'm going to finish out my commitment, because I didn't want to just leave them hanging. And then I was going to leave. And in that time, I started building content. I was building up my YouTube or my TikTok. I was trying to just get the Fundy Freed name out there. But it was kind of like that slow build of like simultaneously rebuilding myself and creating this outreach to help people not feel like I ever felt. I didn't want anyone to feel alone, and I wanted people to feel accepted. I wanted people to come have a safe space they could feel like they could come to, whether they still were in the religion or they were not.
Mm-hmm.
Because I respect the fact that people completely leave the faith. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of times I've almost done that has been countless. And my faith has drastically changed over the years, but I still have faith.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted everyone to feel like they had a home and a safe space and a place where I could call out all the things that I've seen over the years and counter it with like logic and science and truth and love and all of these things. And it just kind of bubbled into this burning fire of passion where I could not think of anything else. I had to do this.
Oh,
so January 1st, 2023 is whenever it launched. I think I had 5 people on my Facebook page. They were like family and friends. And, you know, I had like 10 subscribers on YouTube, which I don't have that much on YouTube still, but it's totally fine. It's just funny how like it went from that to now it's starting to really grow, and I'm starting to, this community is really coming together. People are feeling more comfortable sending me stories and talking to me and telling me how what I'm doing is helping them. Like people I didn't even realize had followed me for some of them since the beginning. I had no idea. And to me, it's like, all right, it's worth it. The blowback that I get from being so open and being so public,
yep,
it's worth it. The trauma, the heartache, the hard work, all of these things to build myself into the person that I am now was worth it, because I'm able to show people it's worth it on the other side. It's really hard right now, but it gets better. It does get better. And it's okay if you have those bad days where you step back and go, you know what? I feel like I would be much better off in the church than I am here. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
As Jeremiah put, if you want to go biblical, there's a fire in my bones I can't quench. You know?
Go biblical. Yes.
Go biblical.
That's awesome. Oh,
I think it's just so important that, you know, there are these spaces and that you've created this space where you've been so vulnerable. So other people feel like they can then be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it takes away the shame and it takes away some of the darkness yes. that's hiding some of these things that are happening, right? I really do believe that when you feel less alone is when like healing really takes off, you know, and I've seen that in my own journey and I've seen that in the journey of others. And so it really is important to create these spaces.
Right. It is. Because humans, by nature, we're not solo creatures. We are a community-based, you know, creature. So we need that acceptance. We need that environment to thrive in. We need that community. Mm. As much as the American culture likes to make you think that you don't, we do. Like, it's like a need in us. So for a lot of us, and you guys know, like, coming from such a high-control environment where that was your world and that was your community and that was what you... that was your life, your personality, everything, to then step out into this whole unknown by yourself. Mm. It's terrifying. Mm. Absolutely terrifying. But once you make that step and you realize, oh, wait, there's a whole other collective over here. There's a whole other group of people over here, different spaces, but we're still on the same island. Mm. You know, we're in different parts of the journey, but we're all together.
The way I view it is I see you over there through the fog.
Yes.
You know, and I'm trying to take like little steps to you. And it is crazy how an entire world that you had no idea existed does exist. It's almost like going to a different planet. It's like, there are aliens. There are aliens. Yes. There are people yes. unlike me.
Yes. Yeah. The most bizarre thing that I had to realize is that people that did not have a religious background could have a moral code.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You mean they're not just raping and pillaging?
Right. Exactly. And I have found more acceptance outside of the church and more love outside of the church than I have inside.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what they told us was not going to happen.
Right. So true.
So what have you seen the biggest thing that's played out, say, in the, obviously, the way you were parented, which we've already talked about it, but what is so different about the way that you treat your girls or teach them or instruct them or guide them or don't at all?
Yeah,
maybe.
So the biggest thing that I have changed from my own upbringing is open communication. Hmm. So I encourage expressing of emotions. I encourage us having conversations about how we feel, whether they're negative or positive, because I think it's detrimental for kids to have a moral code put on how you feel. So this is my rule. You can be angry with me, but you cannot be disrespectful. Mm-hmm. You can talk to me and you can tell me you're mad at me. We can have a conversation, but you can't sit there and throw things and have a tantrum. You have to learn how to regulate those emotions and talk about them in a productive way. And of course, I don't say it like that, like philosophically to like my 9-year-olds, but you know what I mean? That's like the general gist of it. Because I was raised that you're only happy, you're only joyful, you're submissive, you're only all of these certain things. But if you're angry, if you're upset, or if you're hormonal as a preteen, all of these things are sinful and all of these things are bad. And if I would go to my mom, and my mom did the best that she could with what she had at the time, you know, she was a victim too in the whole situation. But if I'd go to her with an issue, it became like a much bigger issue. Like emotional vulnerability was never allowed. It was discouraged. You know, I couldn't go say, hey, mom, I'm really struggling with this because of X, Y, and Z. Or it would be because it would become more of, I can't believe you're even struggling with this. Mm. How could you be dealing with this? Mm-hmm. Whereas with my kids, I'm like, okay, they come to me. I have a problem with X, Y, and Z. And I hide the shock factor. I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to deal with this yet. You know, I hide that. And I'm like, okay, let's talk about it. Mm. This is from my experience as an adult and as your mom. This is my, you know, we go through that. I've been doing that with them since they were small, even before I really, really started deconstructing. And I was just at the very beginning, dipping my toe in it. I was very big on like openness and calm conversation. And now that my oldest is turning 13, you know, now we're at the age where she doesn't want to be around me that much anymore, or she doesn't want to talk to me that much anymore. But whenever it comes down to it, she's like, mom, I need to talk to you. And she will talk to me about everything.
Yeah. You're her safe space.
I'm a safe space.
Yeah.
And I guess I just say all that to say I intentionally created my relationship with my children in an emotional safe space.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of crap they're going to deal with out in the world. They need to have safety here. Another big thing is also bodily autonomy. I really, really teach bodily autonomy. They don't have to hug and kiss people if they don't want to. They don't have to go to a family member's house if they don't want to. Like, they have these choices with their own bodies that I never had, which sometimes it becomes rather difficult whenever you have three girls that are very differently opinionated and very fiery and very independent going against me. But I'm like, this is what I'm facilitating, because this is what's going to help you whenever you're an adult. This is what I want for you. I want you to have that independence and that self-confidence and that ability to be emotionally regulated. That's kind of like my long-term goal for them.
Well, I hear you too, like normalizing the human experience. And how often were we like shamed for these like very human things, right, that were going on for us? I mean, you talked about the hormonal piece, right? Like, you're 13 and hormones are going wild and you feel like you're going crazy and you're just shamed. Like, you should get hold of yourself, you should whatever. And I hear you saying that you're normalizing the human experience for your kids. And I think that's so, so important, and probably one of the main reasons that they do feel so safe, because they know that you get it and you're human too, and it's okay for them to be human, and you're going to help them work through those hard pieces of being human and not shame them for that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's my ultimate goal for sure.
To hear you.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah. I was thinking about your whole thing about emotions and the power of allowing for those, the good and the bad. I mean, I wouldn't even say that. The uncomfortable.
Yes.
I don't even want to call them good and bad. The uncomfortable ones, the ones that have been told to us are negative, and not just the ones that we want to have all the time, like joy and peace, you know, but the harder ones for us, the ones that are more uncomfortable. And like Liz said, it's all part of that human experience. And being human and being vulnerable with each other as we're raising our kids, as we're raising ourselves, I think is huge. Absolutely huge. I know for me, I never knew I was allowed to experience anything other than joy because it was my middle name. Like, that pressure that was put on me, joy is your middle name.
Oh man. Yeah.
And so, and I also had the Jesus Others You that you mentioned at the beginning, and that's how I was going to get joy. But
exactly.
Yes. But I just think, like, wow, how powerful that is for us as parents to think, like, no, the range of emotions are human and they all have something to teach us.
Yes.
It's so great. I love that. And the whole safety around that, that's beautiful. Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
So great. Well, picture yourself sitting with your three daughters at your dinner table. And if they would actually listen to you, you have one that's turning 13. So maybe she'll be like, I don't want to listen, but just pretend. We can pretend.
Yeah.
They'll be soaking in your mom wisdom. What would be your overarching message to them about God, faith, and themselves?
That God loves them and has created them for a purpose. And that purpose is not dictated by anyone else, but themselves and what they work out with God. That another human, another man, another woman, another any outside circumstance does not dictate who you are. Who you are is who you are at your core. Are you loving? Are you kind? Are you presenting yourself with this? Are you meeting people where they are versus expecting them to come to you and change to be a part of your life? The biggest thing I want them to lead in this life is with love, because they're seeing right now a lot of reactions from Christians, especially in the family, that they're not used to because of the things that I do. One of my kids, she's struggling with her sexuality at the moment, and I'm supporting her 110% because that's what moms and dads should do, in my opinion, you know. Just, but it's like I'm trying to just facilitate a safe space for her to feel comfortable. And they're realizing that Christians are not so Christian. And what I'm trying to teach them is God is not what you see reflected in Christianity. God is love. God is you wanting to buy a McDonald's hamburger for the person on the corner because they're hungry. Because my kids, they want to do that. They're like, Mom, let's feed this person. You know, that is expressing the love of God. And to always, always see the value in yourself. Because you have so much to offer this world. There's a reason you were put here. There's a purpose that you were put here. And it could be something small. It could be something really big. But it's not insignificant at all. And to always value yourself above what other people see in you. Because that's where your strength is going to come from.
Thanks.
Powerful.
So where can people find your stuff?
All right. So you can find me on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram at Fundy Freed. And that's FundieFreed. And I'm so proud I spelled that.
Well, Amber, this has been very powerful and really great. We really appreciate you coming on and being
thank you.
So we're so about vulnerability and openness. And you have been that in spades. So
thank you. Thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed my time with you ladies so much.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Deconstructing Mamas podcast. We love that you tuned in and hope that this gave you a little bit of grace and space for your soul to breathe.
Don't forget to catch up on any of our episodes that you missed. And remember to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Deconstructing Mamas.
That's where you'll find all the information that you need about the podcast, as well as on our website, deconstructingmamas.com. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter when you get there.
If you'd like to support the podcast, join our Patreon network for just $3 a month and have access to our private community with all kinds of extras. Leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts or just tell others about the show.
Thanks for listening and come back again for our next episode. We can't wait to be on the other side of your headphones.